President Donald Trump has announced that he will start the 4-year-long process to remove the United States from the Paris Climate Accord. KCSB reporter Amerika Raffanelli spoke with Emily Williams, a graduate student in the Department of Geography at UCSB, about the Paris Climate Agreement and the effects of Trump's decision. For our listeners who might not know, what is the Paris Climate Accord?
The Paris Climate Accord was agreed at COP21, which was in 2015, and COP is short for the Conference of the Parties, and it's under the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. And so, long story short, for the past 21 years, countries from around the world have been coming together and negotiating how exactly we're going to combat the issue of climate change. So how we're going to reduce CO2 emissions, how we're going to increase carbon sinks, then also how we're going to put together adaptation schemes to help people adapt to climate change. Took them 21 years to come up with an actual agreement that every country could get behind. And that's what the Paris Accord was, 21 years of negotiations.
So today, President Trump pulled the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Agreement. Mm-hmm. What were Donald Trump's motivations for doing this?
Donald Trump has talked a lot. He's pulled up a really common frame, which is this jobs versus the environment frame, with this idea that we cannot do things that are environmentally sustainable at the same time as increasing the total number of American jobs. And that's a really false dichotomy. It's perpetuated a lot by Republicans in general. But he was concerned that the Paris Agreement would result in dramatic job loss. I think also, though, a lot of his reasoning for doing this is wanting to undo everything that President Obama put in place. The Paris Agreement, the very ironic part about this is that the Paris Agreement actually has no binding targets. So you can stay part of the Paris Agreement and not do anything, and there's no sort of legal repercussions. So you don't get a slap on the wrist, you don't get sanctions, there's nothing really that happens to you if you don't meet the targets. And so other than rhetorically wanting to continue his climate denialism that he bases campaign on, and to continue this fight with the rest of the world that further separates the U.S. from other global leaders, there's really no reason to pull out of it.
And what are the implications of the U.S. leaving the agreement, given that the U.S. was once a leader in the fight against climate change?
The U.S. needs to decide whether it wants to be a leader or not. I mean, so the U.S. leaving it, again, it's not that it changes measurable emissions of carbon dioxide, but it's this idea that the U.S. has decided that it wants to give up its leadership seat at the table, working with other countries to come up with, you know, agreements on how we're actually going to solve the issue of climate change. And whether or not Donald Trump wants to admit it, climate change is real, is anthropogenic, so it's driven by industrial human activities. And just because you deny something and don't want it to occur doesn't mean that it's not real. And so by pulling out of the accord, the U.S. is ultimately saying that we don't want to play a global leadership role anymore. And it's not just about climate change. It's also about playing well with other countries. The U.S. is going to have to get serious about climate at some point. And if we get serious about it now, we can come up with really smart transition plans that help slowly move ourselves out of fossil fuels, move ourselves into renewable energy economies, or we keep our heads in the sand for a while. And then down the road, we're going to have a really, really rough, dramatic transition that's going to leave a lot of Americans, ironically, jobless.
Beyond the effects that this move will have on the United States, what are the global impacts of Trump's actions?
The global impacts are horrendous. And again, the initial Paris Agreement, when you actually added up something called the intended nationally determined contributions, or the INDCs, this is what each country came to the table and said, this is how much we're going to cut in terms of greenhouse gas emissions. It actually added up to a global average temperature rise of over 3 degrees Celsius, and we're supposed to be staying to 2 degrees. So already there was an existing gap. We don't want to pretend that the Paris Agreement was going to fix all the problems. But the global implications of the U.S. stalling further, and instead of actually after the Paris Agreement coming back, for instance, this year in Bonn and coming up with even more ambitious NDCs, we are going to be widening that climate gap more and more. So it might not be 3 degrees Celsius that we're looking at. It might be more like 4 degrees or 5 degrees. We have to remember that even though today China is the largest emitter of greenhouse gases, the U.S. is the number two emitter. When you look at historical contribution of emissions, the U.S. ranks number one and like far surpasses any other country. And so the global, like just so we really, really understand the global implications of this, already globally, we are experiencing the impacts of climate change. We're experiencing it here in the United States with more intense and frequent storms like Hurricane Katrina. We're experiencing with things like the drought, the historic drought that we just came out of in California. In Bangladesh, there's incredible sea level rise going on. Maldives are seriously considering whether or not they'll have a state because, you know, their entire home can go underwater. And these impacts are just going to get worse and worse over time. And something that I work on is this tenant under the UNFCCC that's on loss and damage. And it's this idea that we're not going to be able to avoid all the damages that climate change can create. We can't adapt our way out of it, and we can't mitigate our way out of it. And what was really exciting a few years ago is the COP process agreed on putting together a claim sort of mechanism for loss and damage. So when countries like the Philippines are hit by the superstorm, the Typhoon Haiyan back in 2013, that to pay for the infrastructure loss and all the damages they'd accrued, that they could actually go to developed countries and say, we need help paying for this. U.S. not being willing to sit at the table leaves this massive gap. And the question is, are other countries like the EU, New Zealand, Canada, Australia, are they going to actually step up and fill that gap? Or are they going to look at this as an excuse of, if the US doesn't have to do it, we don't have to do it? And it's really scary to see things like Brexit happen, for instance, right after the election of Donald Trump, and to see the rise of Marine Le Pen in France. And even though she was defeated, we're seeing these sort of things happen a lot in the global north. And the question is the rest of the world going to follow the U.S. and leave the table, or are they going to actually step up and pick up ambition where the U.S. left off?
So the process to pull out of the agreement will take 4 years. Therefore, the next president will have the jurisdiction to decide whether the U.S. should officially pull itself out of the agreement. What do you see happening in the future?
My dearest hope is that the president in 4 years is not the current president that we have right now, at least in terms of, I mean, in terms of a lot of things, but specifically in the case of climate change, we need a president who doesn't deny scientific evidence and actively undermine climate scientists, some of whom are my colleagues. Over the next 4 years, I think one of the things that really needs to be happening is for states like California, who have made such bold claims about picking up where Donald Trump and the federal government have left off, for states, for municipalities, for businesses, for nonprofits, for civil society groups to pick up that slack and continue it. It's going to be a long and messy process for the U.S. to pull out of the Paris Agreement. And again, because the Paris Agreement doesn't have these binding targets, there's no actual direct, like, legal impact on our emissions. But where the impact of it comes rhetorically with this idea that the U.S. is no longer prioritizing climate action. And so we need to think about, like, how can a more decentralized movement and more decentralized governance structures pick up that slack and provide the ambition necessary to keep us on track to be dramatically reducing emissions over the next 4 years. If we want to avoid 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming, for instance, we are going to miss that window by the time the next president is elected. And so the change has to happen now. We know the federal government's not going to lead it. The rest of the world is kind of relying on states, municipalities, civil society groups, businesses, universities to pick up the slack.
And is there anything else that you would like to add?
I would just add that the only silver lining that comes out of this is a lot of people look to the Paris Agreement as a fix-all, that it was a silver bullet that we've been waiting for and climate change is solved. And that was never going to be the case. it is incredibly disheartening and really disrespectful to the people who are the most impacted. The fact that Donald Trump wants to pull out of the Paris Agreement, the one thing that it does at the same time as him approving the Dakota Access Pipeline and the Keystone XL Pipeline and just disregarding people along those two routes, is that it's really making America wake up to the realities posed by climate change and posed by these governance structures that have ignored human rights for so long. Mm-hmm. And makes us realize that no one's going to save us. It's kind of time that we save ourselves.
That was Emily Williams speaking about the implications of Trump's decision to withdraw from the U.S. from the Global Paris Climate Agreement.